Session number 5868, Horton Mundy, part 5.
Well, now, my great nephew, Ashley O'Brien, came this afternoon and set the tape up for me, ready for tonight. Well, now, I'll try again to make a few tapes. And first of all, Mr. Barley came, or I should say, this tape, I don't think he mentioned it, should be tape number 3X. Now, Mr. Barley came to see me this afternoon and to collect the tapes that you lent me. Now, I don't know how to address you because all I can say is Lynn MacDonald, historian, author, broadcaster, and so forth. Now, I hope you don't think I'm too familiar talking in that strain, but I had those tapes that you sent. I feel highly honoured to think that you lent an old man like me those tapes, and I thoroughly enjoyed them. Some of my friends, those that helped me, that come once a day, nieces and nephews, they came and heard quite a lot of them, and like me, they was astounded, and I think they're marvellous. How you've done it, I don't know, but that's it. And now you sent a tape for me to talk about Gommecourt. Well, now, I'll tell you what I want to do. I don't know whether it'll be what you need, but it's the main thing is, now I'm old, blind, lonely, sit hours and hours alone. When I do make tapes, well, it gives me something to do and help pass the time away. Well, what I want to do now, I think I sent you two tapes that I made about 2 or 3 months ago, and I don't enjoy too great health, and I haven't made any since, but now this will set me going again. Well, what I want to do, and I think you'll realize, the tapes that I make are not all war. It may be a change from all war, because as things happened in England in those days, apart from the killing and slaughter. You know all that, it's in your books, and you'll know by my tapes, it's the same. So just mingling, just a little bit of home life with it, may be of interest to you. I hope it will anyway. Well, now, I told you on the last tape of those two that we went to High Wycombe, and they was forming a new battalion, which eventually was done to support the first battalion that was having casualties galore on the Western Front. Well, now, I'll tell you different things that happened there, but please don't think I'm big-headed, because what I'm going to tell you is absolutely true. Now, I told you, I believe, that we had a tent, what they call the Expeditionary Force tent, which was in the camp. All the other tents was the recruits being drawn mainly from London. And I think I told you that the main bunch of them there came from the sporting families in London. Among those, I don't know if I mentioned it on the other tape, I forget now, but Jim Sullivan was the prominent one. Well, he was middleweight champion. And there were several other champions with him, quite a bunch, a school of their own. Now, in those days, boxing and athletics was far, far different to what they are today. Lawn tennis, you never heard much of that, only just ping pong, with the well-to-do, but little more, no sport really, not to get in the press even. And also football, even the football then was not hardly very little more than athletics and boxing, certainly not more than boxing. That was outstanding in those days. Well, now let me wander off. And in this camp, they came there, they had that sporting party, they had the ring put in the centre, in the park at I Wycombe, in the centre of the camp, the tents was all round, in the centre, they fitted up a boxing ring, and on the Sunday, they used to have a band, they had formed themselves into a band, quite a jolly good brass band, and the public used to come in and watch. Now, here's a little tale I'm going to tell you. I'm wandering again. It don't matter, it's true. Now, in that tent, expeditionary force tent that we had, we'd all come back from the front, and as I told you on earlier tapes, there was well-to-do people that rushed to join the colours. Naturally, Buckinghamshire, there were some well-to-do people. And in this tent, I'm going to pick you out two very, very prominent people in those days. Now, one was Charlie Watson. I'll give you, that's his name, Charlie Watson. He came from Beaconsfield. Now, he was just a bit older than me, perhaps 23 or 4. Now, he was an architect, at least. He was being trained as one, put it that way. And I know it was true because many years later he came to see me here. And the other one I'm going to tell you about, his name was Hill, Cherry Hill. He came from Princess Risborough, and he was an auctioneer. Now, he was a right outstanding chap, was Cherry Hill. He was a right lad. Now, he was a college. So they was both college. I'm only dealing now with these particular two in the tent of about a dozen of us. Now, these two. Now, Cherry, he was a right raw lad, college. Now, I'm going to tell you a little tale now how it happened. We were lying in the tent one afternoon. All the troops that was in training was out somewhere, out on a march. Now, Cherry, this afternoon we were lying there, and it was a warm afternoon, we laid out. Cherry, in one of his old moods, he says, "Would one of you boys come and have a spar with me?" So nobody said anything, and he kept on all the time. I said, "Shut up, Cherry, go to sleep. Let's have a sleep. Keep quiet." "All right," he said, "all right, old boy." And he was ever so nice chap. And he said, "I'm going out." And as he went out to get out the flap in the tent, he stepped right on my shins. I said, "Oh, hell, Cherry." I said, "Go on, I'll have a bit of a do," I said. He says, "All right," he says, I won't hurt you. He told me, he says, "I'm champion of the college," he says, "but I won't hurt you." I thought, blimey. Well, I'd been training years for that game since I was about 14. Well, we went in this ring. The camp was absolutely empty. And on the far side of the camp was the police tent. Now, in the police tent was the manager of these London School of Boxers. So he went across to the tent and got a set of gloves, come back. We went in the ring. Well, it didn't take long. Poor old Jerry, I got him weighed up in short time. Now, don't think I'm big-headed. I'm telling you the truth. And after a little while, we carried on a little while. Poor old Jerry's nose was bleeding, his lips was cut, and we was only playing. Old Jerry says, "Baggy, you," he said, "you're a crow. I said, no, I'm not. Anyway, we went down. There was a trough in the camp just under some trees where they'd laid the water on, and we could have a wash in there, have a swill down, have a good wash. Well, we were stripped out and I was swilling, and somebody come across and tapped me on the shoulder. He said, what's your name? I said, Corporal Mundy. He said, no, he said, what's your name? I said, Corporal Mundy. All right, he said, what name do you use in the ring? I said, none at all, and I hadn't. I wasn't a pro at all. All right, he said, will you join our school? I said, yeah. I said, wait a minute. I said, all right, I will. Now, he said, what's your name then? Well, Horton Mundy. I thought, oh, blimey, that's a daft name. So I said, call me Bob Mundy. And that's the name I used. Well, then I joined that school. Sundays they had competitions for the public. And joining the camp was an artillery brigade, all training farther along the park. It's a long park at High Wycombe. And there were all this artillery crowd there with their officers and all that. And they used to come along on a Sunday and come and watch the boxing. Sometimes they brought some of theirs along. Well, not sometimes, often. Brought some of their artillery chaps along, and then it came along for a big day. And the artillery officers got this fella, and they said, we're putting up now for the welterweight championship of the Southern Command. Have you got anyone to put up for it? Well, Jim Sullivan. Because these top notchers like Sullivan and one or two national champions there, they wouldn't even waste the time on a thing like that. So Jim Sullivan said to me, he said, Bob, he said, you take him. I said, all right. Well, it happened and I won. It was stopped in the third round. Now that is what happened there. Do you know what? I ought to have more sense. I always was daft. I joined that party, that team, training every day. I ought to have more sense, and I began to get as fit as could be. Now then, there was half of them in that tent that fiddled it, got the discharge, finished with the war completely. And there was me, Muggins, training all the time. Well, I was getting fit. Now, what happened? The following day, the colonel sent for me. Now, the colonel was Colonel Gilby. And he was one of the leading lights of the Gilby Wine and Spirit Merchants. So he was welded. I told you they was all top-notchers there. Well, Gilby was the colonel. So he said, I'm putting you in the police force. I thought, oh, blimey, that's nice. Now that I've had some fun there, they put me on the police. Well, now the games and the antics that used to happen in that place there was all public houses. You see, there was a gold mine, a pub was, in those days, and they was all frightened. They was always full of troops, and they was always frightened that if there was trouble, troops would be barred from using their public house. Well, you fancy being on the police. No trouble at all. There was one pub straight opposite the camp. Well, it was along a road running level with the park. And there was a sort of a river between there and the road where the pub was. I think it was 12 trees. I forget the name of the pub. But anyway, I got in tow. He asked me in, give me a drink or two. And he said, Corporal, at night, he said, would you pop in? He said, before closing time, just in case there's trouble. That was what used to worry the publicans, in case there was a punch up in the pub and got to the authorities and they say, no, pub's barred to troops. Well, I used to pop in there just before closing time so that they was all kicked out to get in camp for lights out. And I used to stand at the end of the bar for about the last half hour. Well, it never used to cost me a penny for drinks. I'd done very, very well there with that. Now, here's another case that was very, very good. And it used to be a sort of a bit of a struggle amongst the police. There was a number of us. Used to be a struggle then to get on Wickham Railway Station. That was a bit of fun. Because when you got on that railway station, you checked everyone going on leave. Oh, blimey, that reminds me of later on my old court-martial. They checked everyone going on the station for a pass. And because when you was on the police, as they came along, you say, got your pass? See, I was on the police myself then, so I know what the game was. Yes, here you are, Corporal. All right, away you go. Well, then, as I told you before, they was all Jew boys. Sunday morning was the day to get on the police, get on the station. Along they used to come, these Jew boys, to get back up to Petticoat Lane for their stall as they left behind. And you got to know them. Well, they'd walk up to you and give you a sheet of, you know, give you the pass. Well, it was just a little bit of blank paper with half a crown wrapped in it. Well, of course, you shut one eye and said, all right, away you go. We used to do very well at that, considering it was only a bob a day pay, or 10 bob a week, me being Lance Corporal. So we had quite a lot of fun in that direction. Now, I told you about Cherry Hill and Charlie Watson. I should have mentioned it before. When they left that camp, they both went away and both took commissions in other regiments and held quite high ranks. I found that after, because one came to see me years later. They had quite high ranks in other regiments. Well, now, often, I told you about the artillery training in the, further along the park, we used to go and watch them. And it was very laughable because everything was all straw and artillery, and we used to watch these recruits training on their horses. I used to learn them to ride bareback and jump and all sorts of things. It was a hell of a fun watching them. But then there were several I got to know, and because they knew me then through that boxing business, and one of them I got pretty pally with. His name was Walker, Niffy Walker. And his parents kept a big hotel just off Leicester Square. Well, he came one Sunday morning, he came when I was on duty. And old kid, he says, I'm going up home. I said, do you want to come? I said, oh, well, yes. I said, I'll come with you. So I put my police badge off my arm, put it in my pocket, and away we went. Oh, blimey, what a day we had. We went to his parents at this pub, and then at night, you know, I had a real good day with them. Then at night, Niffy and me went round, he says, I'll show you the sights of London. I said, well. Well, we did. Went to Leicester Square. We went to the Leicester Lounge. I don't know if that's still in existence, but oh, blimey, what a show. Oh, there was sparkle there, and oh, dear, gals, and oh, how we did have a do. And we got in with some officers that sat there. I don't know where they were, where they came from. They were some other country officers, I'm sure. But anyway, we got in with that lot, and oh dear, we did have a day. Well, we ended up, and when we came out the Leicester Lounge, Niffy says, we'll take a bottle to go back. So So he got a bottle of whiskey. I put it in my pocket. I got my great coat. I put it in my pocket. And as you come out the Leicester Lounge in those days, I don't know if it's the same, but you had to go down a lot of steps onto the pavement. Oh, blimey, I stepped off the top step, slid straight down the others. Niffy come behind me, went to pick me up, went head over heels over the top of me and spread himself across the pavement. Along came the policeman, a civil policeman, picked us up, said, "Where do you want to go?" We said, "To the station." I think it's Malvern, I think, to get back to Wickham, I'm not sure. "Station, all right," he said. He called a taxi, shoved these two in it, take them to the station. Well, we went to the station, we got in the train, and if he said, "Let's have a drink." So I put my hand in my pocket to get the bottle out, and oh, blimey, I was soaking wet, it had smashed. Niffy put his hand in his pocket. When he pulled it out, he said, "Look," he said, "here's the glass I pinched," he said, "and that ain't got a crack in it." I said, "Oh, hell." But anyway, that was the end of our drop of whiskey that night. Well, now I'll carry on now where I left off last night. Now, I don't know how I should get on tonight, because I'm really right up in the clouds, so I should come down with a bang eventually, so I hope I can make a do of it. Well, now, first of all, I made a bloomer. I said that I've quoted Mr. Barley. Well, I was wrong. It's Mr. Butler that I should have said. I didn't know until tonight my nephew came down and brought his set. Now my set here, I mean the old wireless set, I couldn't get a certain program. So I got him to bring his set down so that I could listen. Now this is why I'm sky high. I listened to a broadcast of, shall I be familiar now, Lynn MacDonald. I listened to that broadcast, my nephew brought the set down for me to listen to. All my friends, relations, they've all been notified about it, so they must have all listened to them. And it was very, very nice. Now, this is the snag. Before that broadcast came on, I had a phone call from London, actually from Lynn MacDonald. And we talked for almost an hour. And I'm still up in the air, but never mind. It was so interesting, and I enjoyed it, and I'm highly honoured to think that I spoke with a lady like that. Now, here we go. I'll try and continue my old tales. Now, the main things that I talk about on these tapes are not real war. What I mean by that is, we're not being blown to pieces. I'm going to talk about England as it was during that period. And now I'll follow the tale. I think I told you that I was on the police. The beginning of this tape, this half-hour tape, I told you that I was on the military police. And just one or two things I mentioned. Well, now, that continued for some time, and there's nothing really exciting. There's 101 little tales, but they're hardly worth bothering with. Just a matter of picking up drunks and well, you know, the old pub rows and so forth. But I'll wander on from that now to what followed, and this is another bit of a laugh. Then You see, it began to die down a little then. All the rushed and clamour to join the army and forces at the beginning. Well, now you see, we was getting well into 1915. Well into 1915. Well, of course, the glamour gradually began to die down a bit. But there was no conscription. So the colonel sent for me, and he said, there's a new scheme being formed now, started, a recruiting form, what they call the Derby Scheme. Well, you must have known, of course. They called it the Derby Scheme. He said, now, he said, I'm sending you to your own area where you live to do recruiting. He said, and I'm also sending another chap out of that hut, our little hut. Well, that was all our own, this expeditionary force camp, tent. And he said, I'm sending another one with you. Well, it was old Joe Cosby. And we came back. What the hell? We came back here, and they had a recruiting office at Wolverton, and we had to report to a sergeant major in charge of this recruiting office, which they had formed. It was in a building along the main road at Wolverton, the Stratford Road. Well, now we reported to him. And he said, well, he said, I want you to do the Newport Pagnell area. All right. He said, and you'll use a office in the Oi Street. Well, that office was the registry office there. I should know, I went and got married there, and then went in the hill. Well, that office was where we got to use. Now, do you know the blooming fun and laughs we had out of that, this Derby Scheme? Now, let me tell you first what we was allowed. We used our own bicycles, mind you. We was allowed a penny a mile on our bicycles to go round to the villages and farms in the district. A penny a mile. Well, wherever we went, we had a form, and we had to take this form with us and go to the local post office, wherever the village was, and they'd put their stamp on in the post office to say that we'd been there. And that was a penny a mile and so forth, and they used to count up to quite a lot. Well, now, what we had to do was to find out different people. And we was told, everybody was always very kind to tell you, oh, farmer so-and-so, he's got two sons. They won't join up, they don't intend joining up, till they're forced to. Okay? So, as soon as we got a tip like that, away we went. We'd go to a farm, see the farmer, his sons would be in the, sons would be in the field, we'd find them, and what they had to do was to sign a form so that they could be called up eventually, not to join straight away, but to be called up when the time came. Well, they used to try and dodge that, and that's how we used to have to get their permission and sign this form. Well, now, by doing that, they also came to our office at Newport Pagnell, and when they came, they was allowed, we was supposed to write them a chit, and that chit allowed them the value of 1 shilling, and they could go take that chit to the pub at the corner, which was the Ram's Head at Newport Pagnell.